Hey everybody, this is Natalie Griffin coming at you live from Naughty Shaman, and I am so excited to talk with you today about feelings. We're going to open up our souls and share like our deepest, darkest... No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to do it like people used to do it back in the 60s, and we're not going to chant and do a bunch of drugs and hold hands and sing Kumbaya, although I do wield hands because I do really love that. But what I do want to talk about is feelings. Did you know, for instance, like, so this is where I'm just going to begin. I'm just going to dive in. I feel like we're friends and we can just go there. In shamanic cultures, in Peruvian shamanism, there are three main energy centers that the indigenous folks work with. We have seven chakras that are, you know, people think they're Hindu chakras. I don't think that the Hindus think that they own the chakras. It's just part of our luminous architecture. In some Buddhist philosophies, we have upwards of 19 different chakras. That's way too many for me to get my head around. I'm a practical girl. I like to keep it simple. So in our practices at the center, we work with 8, 9, 10, 12 max, usually around that number. But today, I want to talk even more simply about three energy centers and the one that we most neglect. So the first energy center that shamanic cultures value and are aware of and work in is this energy center that's around the head and throat, eyes, top of the head. And it is the mental energy center. In South America, the mountain people, the Karo tribe, will call this energy center Yachai. Isn't that fun to say? Yachai. And the Yachai energy center is all about how we see the world, reason, ideas, arts, our connection to spirit. A lot of things are going on in that energy center. But in a nutshell, you could summarize this energy center to be and contain the mental realms of our being, our thoughts, our ways of seeing, our beliefs, our analysis, all that brain function kind of lives up there. Okay, so that is Yachai. Now, the other energy center that I want to talk about, and also Yachai is connected often symbolically to the sun, to the divine masculine, S-U-N, S-O-N, however you want to think about that, the sun, the divine masculine energy, that constant clear force in the universe that, like a sun, will pull a seed out of the dark soil. The divine masculine coaxes us into greater expressions of ourselves. It creates safety and makes us feel brave to go be even more awesome than we already are. It's like we once were like a little tiny willow tree sapling, and then the sun shined on us, and now we're like huge, massive willow tree with baby willow trees everywhere. That's Yachai. Okay, moving down a little bit further. I'm going to go down to the lowest energy center on the body, and it's down around the first, second chakra, down around the hips, the juicy bits down there. And this energy center contains the wisdom of the body, the carbon, mineral essence of who we are, how we use our body, how we learn through physical and somatic experiences. The wisdom that is in our bones. And this energy center is connected to the divine feminine, which in South America they personify as Mother Earth, also known as Pachamama, which I love saying that too. So this energy center down here down low in the hips, that's associated with our body wisdom, our physical being in space, is called Liangkai. That is also fun to say. Double L. Sometimes it's called Yankai, but they'll pronounce it often down there, Yankai. Lots of L's. So this energy center is how we connect physically to the world and that divine wisdom in the bones. Now, the energy center that is often most neglected is the energy center that is right in the center of us, uniting these two divine energies. So for many of us, we feel a deep and profound disconnect with the universe because our masculine and feminine energies are not connected. And we need them to get connected. I mean, imagine it. The masculine and feminine, they want to get together and make stuff happen. That's what they do. Those parts fit together so good. Inside of us, it has nothing to do with our anatomy. It has everything to do with the essence of those energies. They need to get it out so that we can create the universe that happens in our heart, that happens in our heart center, which they'll call Munai. In fact, Munai in South America, it has similar meaning to the word Namaste in yogic cultures. So it essentially means like that divine compassion, love, that spiritual love of all things, the Moon Eye Center. So the Moon Eye Center houses our emotional wisdom, our emotional learning. And I'm going to give you three guesses, although you won't need them because you'll be able to get it in one because you guys are smart cookies. Which energy center do we value most in our global culture? There are some cultures that might resist this tendency, but certainly in Western culture, we value, number one, the realms of the mind. You hear it everywhere you go, especially if you work in business. We don't need to be emotional. We don't want to get emotional. We don't want to make this decision emotionally. She's too emotional. He's too emotional. He's emotionally repressed. We talk about it, our emotions, like they're little demons that need to be hidden away in a closet. And when we do that, think about what happens. Think about if you were hidden away in a dark closet for centuries as a culture. You'd be a little cranky. I would be cranky about that. So our little squishy bits in our heart get sequestered off into this dark closet where they're named in shame. Most of them aren't even named. All of our emotions, anytime we feel sad, we think something wrong with us, we would take some Prozac so we can be happy all the time. Like the beer commercials tell me I can. It's so not natural. We need access to our emotional realms if we're going to be powerful forces in this universe, especially powerful forces of good. I might suggest, this is Natalie Pinion, this is not capital T truth, that I guess I'm curious that if our love of the mental realms has outweighed our love, and our love of compassion and tenderness, that we have created a world that is so technologically advanced, and yet suicide among our youngest tribe members around the world is at its highest rate in history. In history, kids are committing suicide. The depression is at its highest rate in history. For all the amazing things we've done from the place of the mind, I can't help but wonder what we might create if we brought our hearts and bodies along too. I feel like the three of those things get along quite well, like a trifecta of awesome. It is reminiscent in Christian mythology of the Trinity. In pagan cultures and Celtic shamanism, there are the trinities of the goddess, the trinities of the gods. Trinity is a holy number. And yet here we are in the West trying to run around with just our heads, which doesn't work. And then, of course, we do love our bodies, but some people do. And that's even better. You know, if you can get two of these energy centers online, then you're better off than just having the realm of the mind. But I used to refer to myself as the severed head. I used to go to corporate America and just think and try to get it right and not show any emotion and get it right and do what other people thought me to do and be, you know, all these places of the mind. And I would go all day and not even realize if I was hungry or had to go to the bathroom. Unbelievable disconnect with my body. Didn't enjoy being touched, didn't enjoy making love, didn't enjoy anything, didn't enjoy food, didn't enjoy anything. Because I had no idea how to connect my body. My body, I just learned somehow that my body was just a place, it was just like a big shame sack I had to carry around with my mind. And the mind was the only thing valuable. And definitely my emotions were super weird and I better hide them. And I think that some of you might be able to relate to some of that learning. And so to me, the awakening process, the becoming a whole and vital human, is about waking up these three energy centers. And in me, my loves, we are going the wrong way. If we're chasing the mind, we are all running down a path so fast into the future of all this advancement. And my loves, I think it is the wrong path. It is the wrong path unless we take our heart. Unless we take our heart and each other. And what's it all for? What is it all for? Now I'm going to wrap up with this idea. I was studying with Julio Olaya. He is one of my new teachers. He works with the Newfield Network as an ontological coach. And he's been teaching for over 35 years around the world. And what a joy to be with this man. First of all, he's pure magic and works with such deep awareness and compassion and wisdom in every single moment. He is so present fully, physically, mentally, and with all of the power of his heart. It is astonishing to be in his presence. And I'm so grateful to be learning from him. But this is the one thing I wanted to share with you tonight after all of this, is that We, most of us, only have access to describe and name a couple of emotions. If you ask someone how they're feeling, sometimes they might say, fine, which actually isn't an emotion. It's a description of a blanket term that more or less means I don't want to tell you, or I don't know how to tell you, or I'm afraid to tell you, because if I tell you, I may never come back from this deep well of emotion that I've been repressing. That's why most people don't talk about how they feel. I hear it all the time in my office. Oh, I can't tell you. I can't admit that I'm sad because I'm afraid if I feel my sadness, I'll never get out from under it. And my friends, I'm telling you, the only way out from under it is to go right through it. Sadness doesn't last forever. Did you know an emotion, if you let it roar through your system in one hot breath, will be biologically done with you in 10 to 20 minutes? Your cortisol will flood. Your adrenals will pump. You'll want to punch someone. You might scream a swear word. That's my favorite. And 20 minutes later, it's all done. Unless you repress it and create gigantic stories about it, and then those emotions can last for years and sometimes generations. So for us to develop some emotional distinctions of what we feel, of what we know, I just want to give you some vocabulary so that you can have better conversations with your loved ones and even be able to describe your own experience moving through this life a little better. So we know that we have access to fear. You can feel anxiety, which is like fear light, like Bud Light. I always think of anxiety as like fear light. And do you know what's interesting about fear that I've learned in all my years of working with people and all of my own fear? Is that if you name it, it gets so small, and you begin to sleep at night again. So whenever I start to feel that little twinge of anxiety, get a little twitchy eye, and my heart starts to race, my palms start to get sweaty, and I start to shorten my breath, and I only breathe like right under my collarbones, then I know something's cooking, something has triggered fear. And do you know what the great gift of fear is? Fear alerts us to the fact that we might lose something that means a lot to us. So when you're experiencing fear, start to hunt. Hunt like a jaguar. What am I afraid of? What am I having fear of? What am I afraid will happen? Is it real? Most of our fears are not real. But if it is real, then hallelujah. You just found something that's really, really meaningful to you. What a precious gift. Go love that thing. Go enjoy that thing. So the other emotion is sadness. Sadness and depression. Depression is like sadness heavy. If there's like a port, like, you know, there's ale and then there's port. You know, this is like the port of sadness is depression. And sadness is, feels differently in different people's bodies. But what sadness's gift is to us, if you start to experience sadness and you want to let it roar right through your system, although I experience sadness more like a leaking, a draining of the system. What sadness alerts us to is that we have already lost something meaningful to us. It's a chance to grieve. We've lost a dream. We've lost a loved one. We've lost a hope. We've lost a way of being. We've lost a friend. Sadness is a very natural and important emotion for that. It's cleansing. It comes often with water, with tears, with that sacred salty water of the oceans of the world, which shamans will call the heartbeat of the planet, the pulsing of the tides, the pulling of the moon. That is a beautiful thing to let move through your system. Other feelings that we know about are anger. You can feel that hot spike of anger sometimes. It always feels a little bit like a hot, red hot poker right up my spine. It makes my throat burn. And that's how I experience it physiologically. But anger's gift to us is it alerts us to injustice. That's its gift. Now, if you've learned as a general rule for your whole life to digest anger, you were surrounded by it, you lived in it, you had it, and it's like your cultivated mood of life, then you do need to question the reality of the injustices, because sometimes we get anger goggles on, you know, like beer goggles, you get anger goggles on. Why is this podcast so much about beer? It's so funny. Anyway, so you get the anger goggles on, and then everywhere you see with anger goggles, you see angry eyes, you feel anger, and I would invite you to start questioning, is that real? Do I have to only see through the eyes of anger? We've talked about changing the observer, changing the way that you look at the world. See if you can take out anger eyes and find new eyes. And here's my recommendation for new eyes. It's the last feeling I want to talk about today. Maybe. It's my favorite emotion to talk about for sure, and it's love. Love is a big fat four-letter word, like all the good four-letter words. And it has been lost in our culture in many ways, the nuances of it, the descriptions of it, the feelings of it, the different ways to experience it. I'm truly sometimes, you know, that fear of losing something meaningful. I sometimes have fear of losing this meaningful way of being in the world, of being love, of being loving, of being loved, and allowing that in your life. I worry that we're going to lose this great gift of being human. So it was wonderful to learn this with Julio, because what we talked about were just three of many different kinds of love. And I want to break this down because one of it blew my mind, and I want to blow your minds because I love blowing minds. So what we know about, like, familial love, filial love, that brotherly love, like, I love you, man, love you. And you can love lots of people in that way. Love, peace, love, and harmony. That's that brotherly love, the human connection, love. Good stuff. That's the kumbaya love. That's the drum circle love. That's the we just got on this flight together after turbulence and got off safely love. Like, that's good brotherly love right there. Now, the other love that I want to talk about is one that was so sweet to talk about, and it is tenderness. Tenderness is an emotion. It was interesting because we were talking about tenderness. Tenderness is a sense of deep safety. Like, for some of you, if you were lucky enough to have this experience when you were small of falling down and getting hurt, maybe as a parent you've experienced this, your children fall down and get hurt, your dog gets hurt, something you love gets hurt, something small and precious, and you get scooped up in some arms, and it's safe. And it's not safe because the world has changed. It's not safe because you're not in pain anymore. It's safe because you're together. That's it. Pure, simple tenderness. The holding of a hand when you're crying, you're grieving. The stare of a stranger when your ice cream falls on the ground. These are just such sweet and gentle moments of tenderness that if you're not looking for them, you could miss. And I can promise you, I started to look through the eyes of tenderness in my life a few months ago. And I see it now in so many new places. And I realized that I'd lost some of that in my own journey. Somehow, it's so precious to me. And still, I lost track of it. I lost track of seeing it. I lost track of feeling it. I lost track of receiving it from people around me when they were offering it. So tenderness is what our souls yearn for. It's the only emotional state that lowers our heart rate. It's the only one. You can experience tenderness with a simple touch of hand, a shoulder to shoulder lean. You can experience tenderness by just gazing in someone's eyes. So many beautiful ways to experience tenderness. But our soul craves it. And because we misunderstand it, do you know where we look for it? In the last little description of love, which is eroticism. In our hunger for tenderness, our culture has become addicted to eroticism. I never in a million years thought of it that way. And I'd be curious to know what you think about it. But when Julio suggested this idea, it blew my mind. My mind was blown. And I was thinking of the billion-dollar pornography industry, and I was thinking of all the Tinder, and I was thinking of all this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're such a hungry culture for touch, for tenderness. And the only way as a species we remember being able to experience it is through eroticism. Which, I mean, I'm not knocking eroticism. It's one of my favorite things, let's be honest. But it isn't the same when eroticism is combined with tenderness. It's so mind-blowing. That's a keeper. But it's not always. And they're both delicious separate. They're both delicious together. All of three of them can swirl around even together. But it's interesting to have these distinctions and these definitions available to us now, because now we can start to articulate our needs more clearly with the ones we love. Do you need a hand? Do you need touch? Do you need eroticism? Like, what is it that you're craving? It's just so beautiful. What are you experiencing? How can you share your experience with those around you? Because in the sharing of our experiences that we come together, and that is the essence of the moon eye heart center of energy is in the coming together, human to human, without masks, touching lives. That is what I think. I challenge us to kind of grow in this way with this Moon Eye energy center. How can we open our hearts more to one another? How can we tell our truth more gracefully to one another through the lens of tenderness? How can we do this? Because if we can find small ways to do this, I truly believe we will find solutions that are so wildly creative to some of the interesting problems that we're having right now. We will find creative ways to do things in the world. And right now, we are all being called to become creators. And I would love, in my wildest dreams, for that to be along with our emotional wisdom, not just the rational. Because I think together, those two things win. All right, I'm off the soapbox talking about tenderness. I get all fired up. All right, my darlings, enjoy your night. I'm going to set the coffee down and probably decompress here and do a little tenderness practices. All right, you guys have a lovely night. Let me know how it goes. Pluck out those eyes and try on some tenderness and see what happens. It's magic making, my friends. I'm not even lying. So thanks for joining me here at Naughty Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred totally wild and totally